for talking about people who do a good day's job. If anyone's ever made a pizza, you know a guy making a pizza is not unskilled. That we respected those folks. We gave them sometimes hazard pay. I think the pandemic had lessons for us about valuing each other and valuing a certain kind of worker, or maybe sometimes a little, in a way that wasn't sustainable for people, unfortunately. But we need to get back there and to remember the sort of value of those moments of togetherness and interlockingness.
Alyssa Corr, we want to thank you for being with us, Executive Director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. Her new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for a digital
fellow. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 8 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Paul Rowland.
Oh, your master's lies, he'll kill all the truth, he'll spread all the hatred and poison the roots, he'll hide behind TVs, computers, and spies. I just want you to know that he sees through your lies. Oh, you suck up all the money and you leave us with crumbs. They expect us to be grateful, but we're not that dumb. You feed on the poor and you leave them for dead, and we know that your hunger can never be fed. How fine are your mansions and your golf courses too? How rich are your relatives? You've got quite a few. Your money uncountable, investments unknown. You're a mystery until your cover gets blown. Now I know who you love and who you despise. You love yourself first with a narcissist's eyes, and you despise anybody who calls out your game. Well, I'm calling you now, so take your best aim.
And good morning, everybody. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I am your host, Paul Rowland. I come at you every week here at 8 a.m. on Wednesdays, and there are other hosts on the different talk shows on other days. And that was Seattle's own Jim Page, and a real treasure of the city of Seattle. And he wrote that song, it came out in 2017, right after the Trump presidency, and the whole, a lot of the CD, which is called A Handful of Songs, does deal with the Trump phenomenon, including one song, Nothing Rhymes with Orange. You know who that's about. But of course, Trump and the Republicans do not have a monopoly on lies, and we need to call them out wherever they come from. And one person who's been calling out United States militarist and foreign policy lies for quite a while now, Medea Benjamin of the organization Code Pink, which she co-founded, was supposed to speak in Seattle a few weeks ago, and her event was canceled twice, two different times. So today's guest, and if she was there, she was on this program just a few months ago, talking about her book, my guest will be able to say the name of the book, which I forget in this moment, but talking about trying to explain as she could, best as she could, the reality behind the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the brutal war which ensued. So today's guests are Mary Patterson and Krista Irwin, both members of the Seattle Anti-War Coalition, which was the principal organizer for said planned event by Benjamin, a longtime critic of U.S. foreign policy and militarism. And we're going to be talking about that with them today. So good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. And good morning, Krista.
Good morning.
So, before we launch into what happened and what you think that means, and I don't know what it meant amongst your community in Seattle, et cetera, let me just hear a little bit about what the Seattle Anti-War Coalition is, and sort of a little bit about each of your backstories and what led you to be involved. Maybe start with Krista.
Okay. I joined the Seattle Anti-War Coalition as soon as I left my full-time job in 2019, simply because I heard about their protests downtown, and at that time they were doing monthly protests against the endless wars, like the first Tuesday of every month. And so I joined them, and I instantly fell in love with them and liked the people and started working with them. So there was a guy, to give a little bit of history and background, named Joe Copeland, who was a vet, and his son died in the Iraq War. And he started doing weekly protests downtown. And actually, I shouldn't call them protests. They were more like a memorial vigil. Every Tuesday, he would go down. Many people would join him, and they would read off the names of soldiers from Washington State that had been killed in the Iraq War. And this went on for 10 to 13 years. And then he had health issues and needed to retire, and he moved out of the city. And people at that time decided to continue being there monthly. And Veterans for Peace was a big part of that. They had already been attending monthly. And Earth Care Not Warfare, which is a group of, a coalition really of several different groups with an anti-war interest, they continued to come. And that went on for about 5 years, the last three of which I joined. Right now, the Seattle Anti-War Coalition is going through a transition where we've decided to stop doing the monthly protests downtown. And to start doing other things that we think may have more impact. There's a lot less traffic downtown. We were meeting at the federal building where our senators are located, but they were not there, and their offices have been locked and closed. And so there wasn't much chance to have interaction with them. And people just weren't coming out for it. And we thought we could spend our time and energy doing other things that would have more impact.
That's
what we've been doing. And our first event was was this event with Medea.
And
bringing her on her book tour. So,
and you're all excited about that. And then something happened, which we will get into presently. Mary, maybe talk a little bit about some of the work that you've done and leading up to the Seattle Anti-War Coalition, and maybe just a little bit more about all the groups that are involved in it and kind of how the coalition operates.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Maybe I'll just start my story with 350 Seattle, where I was on the leadership team, and we were approached by Seattle Anti-War Coalition back in 2019, before COVID, wreaked its havoc on downtown Seattle and made that monthly protest not as successful, not as effective as it was. So back in the fall of 2019, 350 Seattle, not to be confused with the national and international 350.org, this is the Seattle branch, which has got a lot of autonomy and it's very active. It was approached by Seattle Anti-War Coalition and one other anti-war coalition called Washington Against Nuclear Weapons. And 350 Seattle decided that, yes, it would join both coalitions in the interest of really elevating the intersection of the climate crisis and U.S. militarism. So we joined both, and that's how I became involved in Seattle Anti-War Coalition for the last several years, trying to bring statements to each of our monthly protests downtown that would again shed light on the way U.S. militarism exacerbates the climate crisis or intersects with it in so many crucial ways. What was the other part of the question, Paul?
You started to get into it. Krista mentioned some of the groups. I don't know if she mentioned all the groups involved with the coalition and kind of just how it operates, sort of, I don't know, give us a feel for it. Because, you know, Portland doesn't have such a coalition. I guess one of my ideas, maybe this might spur some people to think about what it might be like to have something like that in Portland. Anyway.
Yes, and how these things start, they can start fairly small. Not that Seattle Anti-War Coalition is very small. There's, in Washington, and its nuclear weapons has, you know, something like 70 organizations on paper. Seattle Anti-War Coalition, being a Puget Sound, say the sea-oriented coalition, Greater Seattle, has Veterans for Peace, founding member, Earth Care Not Warfare. It has the Seattle Answer Coalition. It has participation from the National Lawyers Guild in the form of an individual. I'm not sure if there's a formal membership in Seattle Anti-War Coalition. There might be. Krista, help me out. What other organizations am I leaving out?
You know, and when it started, there were several small peace groups. There was a West Seattle peace group, and there was a North End peace group. And there's also a South Seattle Climate Action group that still regularly participates. So that's good to know, is just very small groups can start up, and then eventually they can coalesce together and become stronger.
Yes, we have a fairly flat organizational structure. There is an organizing committee, and Krista and I and Dan Gilman, who's a Veterans for Peace leader, are on that organizing committee currently. And we don't raise a lot of money. You know, we're, in fact, very, very small bank account. There's an umbrella organization that, that helps us with the financial part, but we're very small in terms of operations. It's very simple and very easy to maintain right now. We're pivoting from these monthly sessions downtown, which is really where we would meet up, to, as Krista said, out into the communities of Seattle and Greater Seattle more, into the offices of elected decision makers, but not only that, just reaching out to the public more and trying to talk about war and peace at a time when it's very difficult to talk about war and peace.
Yeah, I want to get into the difficulties of talking about war and peace. Back, you know, when the U.S. invaded Iraq on false pretenses. And we just commemorated the 20th anniversary of that right in the midst of this Ukraine war, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which led to this absolutely horrific war that's playing out in front of us like other wars do on mass media. But the mass media totally got behind the U.S. and spread those false information about the Iraq having supposed weapons of mass destruction, and basically enabled, aided, and abetted the U.S. government with that. And I've never really copped to that fully, but that's another subject. And the whatever progressives or leftists in the United States, by and large, were fairly united in their opposition. And there were some very major protests, which, you know, over the years, as things kind of grind on, kind of dwindled, and you had the more hardcore keeping up the anti-war movement, such as it was. Anyway, so now enter into the, you know, in the midst of the pandemic or the tail end of the pandemic, this new war, and all of a sudden, because I think, well, I don't want to express too much of my opinion. You know, the narrative has been very one-sided, let us say, about assigning all the blame to Vladimir Putin and the Russians, which they share I'd say the large share of the blame for sure, but it's not the whole story. So you've got Medea Benjamin planning to come to Seattle, your first public event. And she's been speaking, she had been speaking all around the country. She spoke in Portland, had never been shut down. So what happened in Seattle?
That's true. She has been on her book tour for 6 months. She's been in over 40 different cities, and she's never been shut down or canceled. So it was a real surprise to all of us, including her, that here in our so-called liberal city of Seattle, that she would be canceled. And the interesting thing is, when we worked with the bookstore, we had set this up like 6 weeks in advance. We thought, this is great. We've got lots of time for publicity, and we made a poster with all the information and got it out to lots of people. We knew lots of people were going to be coming. In a couple of weeks before it was scheduled, we got a first email from the bookstore expressing some concern about complaints from a Ukrainian student group on campus, a couple of professors on the university campus, and some members of the larger Ukrainian community. And it seemed like the complaints were somewhat coordinated. And we didn't know the real nature of the complaints. They told us they didn't feel threatened. There were no threats. They weren't concerned for physical safety. They were concerned that their staff wouldn't be able to handle the controversy at an after-hours book event. And we wrote back and said, we're not concerned at all. Medea is very comfortable dealing with protesters. She's a protester herself and is known to invite people up to the microphone to have their say and then use it as an opportunity to engage in dialogue. And then we didn't hear anything for a while, and we thought, oh, probably everything's okay. But a week before the event, again, this concern was raised, and also a concern that not enough people had RSVP'd. And we thought, well, you know, give us 24 hours and we can turn that around. But we weren't given a chance. As during the phone call to tell us that, you know, basically they were canceling the event, we had someone try to go and RSVP and find out that it had already been canceled. So that was the first cancellation.
And so you don't know if, like the university had anything to do with that. Have you gotten any of the backstory at all? Have they said anything publicly?
You know, we have tried to look into it a little more. We've tried to contact the student group. We were given their email. You know, we're very interested in sitting down and having a conversation, partly to check that this is the case, that the people who are complaining are from this group, and also to hear what they have to say. I'm sure there's a lot we could learn from each other.
So
we have not heard back, mm-hmm. and we don't have information about the protesters. We don't have information about if people complaining were pressured from people further up. It's kind of a mystery. It doesn't really all add up because as far as we're concerned, Medea is not a threatening person. The event would have gone fine. And so it's a bit of a mystery.
And so that was just Mary speaking, right?
This is Crystal.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I've got to get your voices straight. I was going to say, so let's let Krista resume the narrative, but let's let Mary take it from there. So that event was canceled. So then talk about the trying to get an alternative venue and what happened then.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, this is Mary. And that was the university bookstore, which is right across the street from the university. And just a quick background for the university bookstore. It's an independent bookseller. We didn't want to vilify it because, you know, we need our independent booksellers. And it has an interesting, it's a nonprofit, actually. And as a nonprofit, it has to have a place where it sends any profits above its operating costs and all the costs. And it sends any such profits to the university. I forget whether it's student groups or other places at the university. So it does have a relationship with the university, and it was sensitive to complaints about the event that it was receiving. So as Krista said, it was actually 6 days before the event. The event was to be on March 14th. On March 8th is when we talked to the event coordinator we've been working with, and and we're told that they decided not to hold the event and encouraged us to find a venue elsewhere, and in fact helped to brainstorm about other venues on the phone. So much to our happiness, we found another event right away. And it was the University Congregational Church of Christ, which is also right across the street from the university, only a couple of blocks from the bookstore. And we thought, oh, that's great, because anybody coming to the bookstore for the event will easily be able to get to the church in time for the event. And University Congregational Church is, you know, well known for its peace advocacy, its social justice advocacy. Our contact at the church seemed glad to be welcoming us to the church. Very quickly a contract was set up. We signed it, bought the required insurance for the event. But incredibly, 4 hours before the event, in fact, I was on my way to the event. I was driving to the event. I try not to drive, but I had signs to take to the event. And I got this call from the church. And it was three people at the church, the person I'd been working with, Pastor Steve, and a third person, I can't remember, who was on the phone. And let me know that they were deciding to cancel the event. And I patched in Medea herself, the author, and Krista, who were together this afternoon about 2:30. Yes, and we had a discussion with Pastor Steve and the two other people on the phone. Basically, the church's story was that they also had heard from the university. Unnamed, does that mean university administration, university faculty? What does that mean? And they had a discussion with the university bookstore, and they said their relationships with the university and the bookstore and the U district altogether are very important to them. That's completely understandable, and as it should be. That we were in conflict, they said, already with university district groups and the university, and that they were therefore deciding to follow the lead of the bookstore in canceling the event. Medea and I had a good conversation with them. I remember at one point saying, you know, it's not quite fair to characterize this as conflict. We're not in conflict with any group or any individual. There have been complaints to the bookstore and the church, but not conflict.
In fact, you had no opportunity to even rise to the level of conflict. Were it even heading in that direction, it just all got forestalled completely.
That's right. It got canceled and silenced. At least the attempt was to silence the event, and it nearly did silence the event. We did, however, have a rally at 5 p.m. in front of the bookstore on University Ave, fairly well attended. I would say there might have been about 30 people there or so. Jim Page, who you opened the program with, sang for us at the event, and that was wonderful. And there were several speeches, including by Medea herself. Dan Gilman from Veterans for Peace spoke. Somebody from the Answer Coalition spoke. I spoke for Seattle Anti-War Coalition. So there was a mini rally outside the university bookstore with great sound provided by Rise Up Productions here in Seattle. So we weren't completely silenced at the bookstore. And then we marched up to the church, and where we were, our event had been canceled. We installed the sound equipment on the steps of the church, and Medea gave a very a very curtailed version of her book talk, but a version of her book talk from the steps of the University Congregational Church, with the rest of us on the steps or on the sidewalk, listening and then asking questions afterwards. So we weren't, you know, we didn't accept the sentence of silence. You shall not talk about this book. You shall not talk about War and Peace. You shall not question the role of U.S. and NATO in a prolonged war, or the conditions, the historical context leading up to the war. You shall not question it. Was the what we were, you know, being told. You will not have this event at the bookstore. You will not have this event at the church. But we had, you know, a mini version of the event.
Yeah, I thought of my use of the term silenced in the headline for this program. I knew it wasn't actually completely accurate, but since everybody else was using the word censored in other accounts, I just thought I'd use silence. Anyway, I totally understand. And that was a very, very spontaneous and creative way to deal with the situation and use the true public spaces when the more controlled public spaces were denied you. So, question, were any of the supposed or actual complainants that you haven't actually gotten to know, did they actually come and express their complaints or their views directly at any of those situations?
Yeah. This is Krista. So the interesting thing is on March 13th, which is the day before our event, Medea did a talk at Tacoma Community College down in Tacoma, and there was a group that showed up there. And she noticed them in the audience. They didn't interrupt her talk at all. But afterwards, they started to talk and ask questions. And unfortunately, I wasn't there, so it's a little bit hard to represent it. But they were concerned that her book was pro-Putin and pro-Russia and that things had been left out of it. And she did engage in dialogue with them. And apparently that conversation went pretty well. And in fact, I understand at one point the audience clapped for the people that came for their bravery in coming and speaking up. And that after the event, I understand there was more discussion, that they sat down at a table and continued to talk and were able to air feelings about things that weren't in her book, and to understand that and agree that, yeah, it was okay for her and her co-author to write a book and not have everything that they might want in it. At the church, a group showed up, and some of them we understand were the same people, and they did have some literature focusing on bad things about Russia and Putin, particularly repression of women and feminism and GLBTQ people, which I think are valid complaints. We wouldn't agree that that's a reason to continue sending arms to Ukraine, but it's certainly their right to come out and speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Mary, anything to add?
Yeah, I would just add that, you know, I read the book during all of this going on. I had bought the book, a couple of weeks before the cancellation even. And it's not a huge volume. I encourage listeners to buy it and read it. It's called War in Ukraine, Making Sense of a Senseless Conflict. It's written by Medea Benjamin, whom we've been talking about, co-founder of Code Pink, and her co-author is Nicholas J.S. Davies. I can tell you can purchase it at University Bookstore, because they had a whole bunch of copies that they did not sell at an event that they canceled. But I want to make sure that listeners know that this book is not an apology for the Russian invasion of Ukraine. It is not an apology for Putin. It's, in fact, is very clear, as many anti-war people are always clear when they make statements about the war in Ukraine. And I also want to point out, we're just talking about Ukraine today. We're not talking about the other wars that the U.S. is involved in, which we should be talking about, and which Seattle Anti-War Coalition is always talking about. But at any rate, back to the book. It's not an apology for the invasion of Ukraine by Russia. In fact, it calls it a criminal invasion, and it's clear. It's clear. But what the book is trying to do, which our mainstream media does not do, is inform us about the larger context, say, beginning actually around 1990 when the Soviet Union was breaking up, and there were no treaties signed to this effect, but there was an agreement on the part of the West that NATO would not expand into former Soviet countries as the Soviet Union was breaking up. And that was an assurance, that a promise that was not kept. NATO did expand eastward, first three countries, and then in 2004, seven more countries. NATO expanded from being 12 countries to currently 30 countries that are not even confined to Europe. And so NATO expanded. The book also delves at length into U.S. intervention in politics in Ukraine, specifically around 2014 political turmoil. And the book explores a lot of other things too, including the role of the media, and suggests some ways forward. One of the important things, maybe this is the last thing I'll say about what I learned from the book, is that negotiations have been attempted for a while. Most recently, we all know China has proposed a peace plan that is derided by U.S. government spokespeople, and but negotiations have been attempted off and on, including at the very beginning. The invasion was, I think, February 24th, 2022, and just a little over a year ago, and just 6 weeks or thereabouts into the invasion, there were some peace talks, I believe, hosted by Turkey. And that was when Boris Johnson, then Prime Minister of the UK, flew to Kyiv and said, don't engage in peace talks. You know, we want you to keep fighting. And I believe it was Lloyd Austin from the U.S. who delivered the same message to Zelensky and decision makers in Kyiv. And that's just one of the stories that the book tells about how negotiations have been actively interrupted by the U.S. and NATO.
Uh-huh. Brings up a bunch of questions. I need to take a quick break. I know someone just called in to our number, which is 503-231-8187. We're halfway into the program. I'm the host, Paul Roland, for this weekly talk show, Wednesday Talk Radio. I have two guests on the phone from Seattle, Mary Patterson and Krista Irwin, who are both members of the Seattle Anti-War Coalition, which was the principal organizer for a planned speaking event in Seattle by Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Coke Pink. And it was canceled twice, once just about a week before and one just 4 hours before by two different venues. And if you missed any of this, you can always go back to KBOO.fm, Wednesday Talk Radio. This particular show is called Dissenting Views on Ukraine Silence in Seattle, and you can read the blurb and get some of the links and listen to the full audio if you've missed any of it. To my caller, just hold on just 1 second. I have just a couple other quick things I want to mention. Oh, it's Santiago, so hold on just a second. And I just wanted to say thank you to everybody who contributed during our recently concluded late winter membership drive, which ended successfully. Thank you so much, because we can only do this community radio with your help, you, the community. So give yourself some applause, and you can always go to our website and click on donate on the upper right hand corner if you so desire. We don't get much money from the government. We don't get corporate money. We get, I think, like something like 80% of our operating budget comes from you, the listeners. We are a listener-sponsored station. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Okay. And I just wanted to really quickly say, obviously, Medea Benjamin can be criticized. No one disputes that. There's a robust debate is excellent. But this kind of mysterious sort of canceling events at the last minute is very problematic and troubling to me personally. But let's hear what Santiago has to say. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. You know, I really want to appreciate the two callers. The name escapes me at the moment, but your name escaped me. But anyway, I just want to appreciate you guys bringing this up. You know, I think it's really important that people, you know, understand that, you know, that this isn't, you know, with all of the issues going on in the United States, it is, you know, it should be alarming that the government continues to be in, that the U.S. government continues to be involved in the they're really trying to, like, get a foothold in Russia, so it's really just trying to depose Russia at this point. But, I mean, not that Putin is blameless by any, you know, he's not blameless in any sense of the word. You know, he's obviously, I mean, he's a product of Yeltsin, who was a product of U.S. and NATO gutting the USSR, so... But I wanted to point out that, I think the last point that I made, you know, people don't realize that, you know, Zelensky and Putin exist because, you know, the United States was so leftist, you know, communist socialist governments, you know, popping up in the world and having a new way of distributing resources and, you know, and stacking the economy that, you know, they could, you know, it's the same thing they did to Allende. It's the same thing they did, in multiple, you know, to Thomas Sankara, you know, anytime, you know, what they tried to do to Castro, you know, it's like, this is that, even though, like, Putin is the furthest thing from a socialist or a communist, and same thing with Zelensky, it's the idea that people can have autonomy. I don't agree with what Putin's doing, but the thing is, like, it's none of our business, period. You know, and, you know, and having people who are willing to stand up and say, you know, because I agree, I'm, like, no war except for class war. You know, we need to get rid of these rich people who benefit from the continued destruction of the Ukrainian and the Russian working.
Okay,
we need to have her.
Okay, let's give our listen. I also forgot to mention, which I needed to, we have two callers, which I try not to do, and I usually don't do, two guests on one phone patch line. I don't know how you call it. So we only have room for like one caller at a time instead of being able to wait. So I just I'll have to let you go, Santiago, because of that issue, and just to let people know that you might have a little trouble getting through. So 503-231-8187. Mary and or Krista, any responses to the caller? Hello?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Santiago. Yeah, we're both jumping at the same time, I think. Thank you for that observation, Santiago. It really is fairly tricky, but not too tricky, to be clear that we and Medea Benjamin, but certainly Seattle Anti-War Coalition, is critical of both imperialist influences in Ukraine. When we say that, we're talking about Russia in the form of its invasion into Ukraine is acting as an imperialist country, and the U.S. in terms of its sanctions and its arming of Ukraine and its interference in the negotiations is interfering also as an imperialist country, and you know that has to be named, that has to be called out. This is not a simple black and white, you know, one side is good, the other side is bad, you know, either you're for a fight to the finish in Ukraine or you're for Putin. Well, we reject that binary. We reject that false choice.
We're
critics of war, and we're critics of the conditions that lead to war, which is a lot of, I think, of what the book is trying to explain and expose for us is the conditions that contributed to the war. Russia and Putin bear sole responsibility for the decision to actually invade and begin this
incredibly destructive, bloody, now more than year-long war. But there were conditions, historical conditions, that the U.S. and NATO contributed to that set the context for the invasion. And that's what the book, I think, is really trying to expose.
Mm-hmm. In fact, it seems like we're stuck in some sort of really strange time warp. Yeah, I'm glad you brought out that idea of binary thinking. I think that's really, really key. People talk very, very rightfully about the issues and distortions of binary thinking in terms of gender and many other things. And that's an important conversation that's finally being advanced in this culture, despite much pushback. But the binary thinking in terms of thinking politically is a really serious problem. It seems like we're stuck in this time warp of some strange iterations of Cold War dynamics that we just can't seem to get away from, that prevents, and split the Cold War dynamics split up the progressive community, certainly back in the McCarthy era, you know, where you had people informing on each other, and just a really brutal period. But now it seems like it's a different change landscape, but same strange, similar dynamics in some way. And I just want to sort of indicate, I know, Robbie, you're waiting, another long-term caller to this program. Thank you. But hold on just a second, Robbie. I put an emphasis on this dissenting views. I think it's really important. I mean, Putin's clampdown on dissent, whether it's feminist, whether it's gay, whether it's people just opposing his authoritarianism, you know, there's all sorts of reasons for dissent in Putin's Russia, and it's need to support them. I mean, Pussy Riot was just an incredible expression of that, and look what they suffered. And it's just because of people have been poisoned. We know it in the West. But, you know, we don't seem to be able to understand how dissent, well, how repression, you know, or as Chomsky called it, the manufacturing of consent, and then opposition to that, because it really is a manufacturing of consent. It's dissent from a really overwhelming one-sided narrative that you're very trying to pick apart here, in which Medea did admirably in her book. I just don't think people are really focusing on the fact that there really needs to be this kind of dissent, and how troubling it is when it's clamped down on, which, you know, even for the best of reasons, and maybe it's even worse, it is for the best of reasons. If it's, you know, if it's an authoritarian clamping down on you, kind of know who it is. Anyway, so with that, I've got some other questions, but I want to let Robbie, if you could be succinct, we're coming down at 15 minutes, go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a question to ask. I'll start off. I really appreciate you both being a part of that and trying to put that on and seeing the resistance to it, and how the universities will stifle any type of dissent or spreading of a narrative that isn't what they want. But with that being said, what I'm finding now is, with the rage against the war machine, Medea Benjamin was told not to speak there by Code Pink. And I'm wondering, you probably don't know why. I mean, I know it's not necessarily the same. You might not be a part of the same, you know, chapter. That might've been the DC thing, but I'm just curious on why Code Pink was so adamant about not supporting Rage Against the War Machine, which has been the only successful, like, large anti-war demonstration that I've seen so far come out against Ukraine. Do you know why that is?
This is Kristen. I do understand that Code Pink asked her not to speak at the event. It was partially put on, and maybe primarily put on, by the Libertarian Party. And a lot of anti-war groups have a lot of concerns with that party. And right now we understand that it's being led by a coalition. I can't remember the name of it. Is it like Menzies Coalition or something? That is known to...
I'm
sorry?
it was, yeah, there's like a name that starts with an M, but it's the Libertarian Caucus. I just don't think that's a valid excuse for not organizing and getting the numbers that we need to all say, hey, this is one, this is all one thing that we can agree on.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have that concern, but I think a lot of people also feel that the Libertarian Party is not very inclusive, that it's not inclusive of people of color,
I'll finish with trans rights.
And go ahead.
If I could, I'll just finish with this one statement. It's just, I believe that was actually used to stifle an anti-war rally. The idea, what they did is they hashtagged it anti-war so white or whatever, and they turned it into a race thing. And my question was, is, well, why wasn't I tried to get on when Paul had a BAM, what is it, the Black Anti-War Movement, right?
Black Alliance for
Peace. The Black Alliance
Correct.
For Peace
BAP.
Was not
yes,
asked
BAP.
To come or speak at it. And they are one of the largest anti-war organizations, national organizations in the country. And so why would you not include them?
I thought that they were the ones that, no, I thought it was they didn't support it because of the Libertarian Caucus that was involved.
Well, we're not going to
I think both are true.
Okay, yeah. We're not going to resolve this particular question, which has happened kind of far away. But I think those are important, very important and valid points.
I mean, I guess, I haven't seen any organizing from them about anti-Ukraine war. You know, it's like kind of a little saddening that they call it so white and they make it a racial thing. And then I haven't been able to support their anti-war Ukraine. All they did was an anti-war of Iraq. And it's like, that's a little late, you know?
Okay. Well, thanks for calling,
they
Robbie.
We have put out a statement on Ukraine. Go and take a look at it.
Okay, well, thanks for calling. We have a little over 10 minutes left. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. And once again, I am speaking with Mary Patterson and Krista Irwin, members of the Seattle Anti-War Coalition. Yeah, I had Julie from Black Alliance for Peace on this program a couple months ago. And I think she said that they're not very active on the West Coast. Are there any people active there in the Seattle area?
You know, not that I know of. I'm personally, full disclosure, I am one of the coordinators of the Solidarity Network of the Black Alliance for Peace for the western region of the country. There are many more Black Alliance for Peace members in the Bay Area, in LA, and Southern California. But yeah, they're not quite as active in Washington or Oregon yet.
I mean, that's such.
If I could just say one thing, addressing what Robbie's concern about the anti-war movement not being able to grow and build, is we are seeing right now that a lot of anti-war organizations are starting to grow and get new members. Our membership has gone up like 20% just in the last couple of months. And I do think that this movement can grow right now. I think it's a good time, and I think we can do it with or without the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, and not to like dismiss the really crucial issue of why people of color would feel uncomfortable working with the Libertarians. I mean, it's a very serious issue. I mean, is it possible for some kind of alliance? That's a big question. Are the Libertarians really that far out front on this issue? That's an interesting question. They've made some, you know, some political figures have spoken. You know, it's, I don't know. We can't really get that deep into it. But we do have another caller. So go ahead, Edie, you are on the line, on the air.
Thank you. This is in response to answering the question at the beginning, why was it shut down? I'm not God, I don't know, but I would like to have folks go to the website Glassdoor app and look up under company top aerospace defense war industry corporations or companies in Seattle, Washington. That may think they have a vested interest in continuing glorifying this war and keeping secret all the other wars. And then we might follow up with that with some strategizing that's more effective. So there's Boeing, there's Lockheed Martin, U.S. Department of Defense, Blue Origin, SpaceX, Safran, Leidos, Collins Aerospace, Northrop, Raytheon, et cetera. Also, we must not stop from recognizing the power of the fossil fuel industry in their desire, and the Biden administration bragging about bombing the pipeline so they could have American corporations make money selling fossil fuel, gas, et cetera, to Europe.
So, Edie, are you on a speaker? Are you on a speakerphone? Are you on a speakerphone? Edie.
Yes, I thought it'd help you to hear me better.
There, yeah, the speakerphone. Don't use speakerphone, anybody. It was really a lot of what I got. You said I got, but some of it I didn't. It was a little blurry. But go ahead, finish your thought, and let's let our guests respond.
Let's address the folks who think they have a vested interest in shutting down questioning of war and investing in alternatives. So we look at the banking industry, the prison surveillance and war industry, and how universities are funded by those bad corporations. And we move our money to community credit unions. And then we can find ways to strategize in addressing those who seek jobs through that, and recognizing there's better jobs for everybody, so that they don't have a reason to shut down wonderful speakers as these.
So, Edie, one quick question for you before I turn it over to Mary and Krista. What do you think of the idea of a Portland anti-war coalition, something like it?
There is one, and I recommend that we follow up on it.
What's the anti-war coalition called?
You're talking to someone who's brain
okay.
damaged by
no.
police brutality. And,
I'm sorry. No worries.
I know
no worries.
That Cody is part of that War Resisters League.
Okay.
International.
Yeah. But there is no.
We have a Portland chapter.
Yeah. Right. But it's one organization. There's no sort of umbrella.
It's working with. It's working with Veterans for Peace, and with a variety of folks who recognize the connection with holding banks and fossil fuels accountable.
Okay, sounds good.
Because all wars most affect women, girls, people of color, indigenous, and nature.
Okay, well, thank you, Edie. Krista and Mary, go ahead.
Gosh, I just want to start by, this is Mary, appreciating the caller who so... brilliantly knit these various interests together, these various violent and destructive interests together, you know, including fossil fuel industry, banking, and the caller also knit in with the U.S. Law enforcement and prison system, which is sort of the internalized branch of the U.S. military. I mean, quite literally, police forces for at least a couple of decades now buying weapons from the military to be used on people living in the U.S. So I just want to appreciate the caller who brilliantly put all those things together, and just tell a quick story about what's happening at the University of Washington. There's a new student group. It's a Seattle chapter of Resist U.S.-Led Wars, which is national, but this is the UW student group called Resist U.S.-Led Wars Seattle. They're on Instagram and Twitter, not on Facebook, I don't believe. On Instagram and Twitter, you can find them. And their campaign is called Cut Ties with Boeing. Cut Ties with Boeing, and they're also elevating the intersection of war and the climate crisis. That's, you know, twin headlines in their most recent rally, which was just this past Sunday on March 26th. And to the previous speaker, whom I think was Robbie, you know, concerned about not joining with all groups in an anti-war movement. That question is still fairly early in the discussion, but I can tell you that this rally, which was down at the Museum of Flight in South Seattle. The Museum of Flight, which is where Boeing has a manufacturer and where Boeing also celebrates its commercial and military history. The rally was held down there, and which is not easy for people to get to, but there were over 100 people. For the first time, it wasn't predominantly older white people myself. It was predominantly young people. Believe predominantly young people of color, and then there were older white people like myself who were there also from Seattle Anti-War Coalition, Veterans for Peace, and others. And that's an example of, you know, a new, perhaps a new wave of war activists who are young, and culturally, ethnically, quote-unquote, racially diverse group, and who are paying attention to what the caller just pointed to, which is that there are interests, of course, we know that, making money off of destruction and suffering.
So
human destruction, human death, and ecological, environmental.
So we only have a few minutes left. I did have Cody from the Resist U.S. Led Wars group on this program a few months ago as well. I don't know the name of that, but if you scroll through Wednesday Talk Radio, you can find all sorts of interesting stuff, including quite a few. I was on the a jag of highlighting the climate and militarism and wars nexus for a period of time there, a couple months. I had quite a few shows. Those are worth looking at. Maybe with the time left, you're both with working with 350 and the Seattle Anti-War Coalition. So is there's been sort of a resistance or just not really making that strong connection within the climate movement. I don't know if it's actually a resistance, but it hasn't really been in the forefront. So is 350 really talking about that? And maybe just share some thoughts about, you know, just the fact that this war is preventing any kind of diplomacy on anything, including real progress on climate.
Yes, there's so many ways that this war and all the wars that the U.S. militarism is involved in are really inhibiting our ability, that's not the right word, but our ability to deal with the climate crisis. One is the massive amount of fossil fuels that's used. The U.S. military, as everybody knows, is the world's number one institutional consumer of fossil fuels and emitter of greenhouse gases. So if it were a country, it would be about around number 50 out of 200. It consumes and emits more fossil fuels than 150 other countries, approximately, in the world. Just an example of that, you know, two-thirds of the fossil fuels it uses is carrying one-third of the fossil fuels to the so-called battlefield. The jets of death that carry bombs, troops, weapons, sometimes nuclear capability weapons, they burn fossil fuels in terms of gallons per mile, not like a car, which is miles per gallon.
Okay,
they,
we only have
so
like
much fossil fuel.
A little over a minute left. Let my other guest have the last word. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. I'm going on too long, Paul.
No, that's okay.
So I'm going to say that the other way the military creates climate destruction and doesn't aid us in trying to do something about climate change is all the money that goes into the military. We are basically up to $900 billion this year that is going to military, and we really need that for people's needs and for working on climate change.
We still have another few seconds if you want to expand on that, or I'll just finish by encouraging people once again. I'll just thank you, Mary Patterson and Krista Irwin, members of the Seattle Anti-War Coalition, principal organizers for the planned speaking event by Medea Benjamin in Seattle, which was canceled twice. So thank both of you very, very, very much for coming on.
Thanks for having us on.
Okay.
Thanks so much for the interview, Paul.
And thank you. And if you missed any of it, go to kboo.fm and look up Wednesday Talk Radio, Dissenting Views on Ukraine Silenced in Seattle. And once again, thank you for all your support during the late winter, early spring, first couple days of spring membership drive, which ended successfully. We surpassed our $17,000 goal. Thanks to all of you. You're great. And again, if you didn't get a chance then, you can always go to our website, look up all the good things, and click on donate. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Ty, for running the board. Bye-bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Hello, lovers of jazz. I am Marcia Hawker, your host for Jazz Lives. On Wednesday, March 29th, I will be joined by Jan Mancuso with research by Paula Walker in honoring the contributions of women in jazz, blues, Latin grooves, and gospel. Voices Without a Voice will cover a woman's place and men's permission. This special four-hour program will air on Wednesday, March 29th, beginning at 12:08 p.m. right here on KBOO 90.7 FM and streaming on kboo.fm.
Connect with your favorite community.